Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Intersections on the Spectrum podcast. The Intersections on the Spectrum podcast is the brainchild of Doug Bletcher and Kelly Brown Johnson, created to discuss intersectional issues within the autistic community and give visibility to commonly marginalized, repressed, underrepresented, or erased identities and issues. We aim to introduce you to the people and stories you didn't know about but needed to hear, and hope that by seeing yourself represented in the community allows you to feel seen.
And today, we are thrilled to welcome Isabel Acevedo. Isabel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I feel so important.
Well, you are. So, and we just wanted to kind of start out, as we do at the beginning of all these episodes, and learn about your identities. What would you say are the identities that you feel like you're most connected with?
Well, sure. I'm Latina, which is something a lot of people don't actually know about me until I speak and they're like, oh, you have an accent. Like, yeah, I have an accent. I'm from Brazil. I was born and raised there and I moved here in 2014. I'm autistic. I got my diagnosis last year at 34 years old. And since then, my life has finally started to make sense. I mean, you know, like, I'm still having an identity crisis, as I say, but it's just, I'm trying to find who I am outside of the need of masking and people pleasing. And I also embrace being a disabled person, because I found that that helped me accept my disabilities, especially my physical disabilities, and move forward with my life. So yeah, I identify as Latina, autistic, and ADHD also. Forgot about that. And disabled.
I really relate to what you're saying about finding yourself now with the new diagnosis, because that's very similar to how it was for me. I got diagnosed at 32, and you know, it was this a bit of a grieving period for all the life that I had before that without knowing, and all the experiences I had that could have been better had I had the information.
The what if.
Yeah, and, you know, not to all the ways I had tried to force myself to fit into things that didn't make sense. Like you said, the people-pleasing, the just pushing myself to try and be something that I could not be. It wasn't possible.
Yeah.
So I really relate to that a lot. I think that's something that happens to a lot of us when we're diagnosed as adults.
Mm-hmm. You question yourself, especially when you pass 30, because there are some behaviors and some things that for me, you know, I looked at myself and thought, wow, you were past 30 and you're still such a child in some aspect because of like some things that would frustrate me, you know. And I think that's what led me to finally get diagnosed, because I was questioning like all the time and I was in such like an identity crisis, like seriously. Before I was diagnosed, and then it just increased once I was diagnosed, and I was like, oh my God, this all is not just a diagnosis. This is not just like some people are diagnosed with a tumor, fine, but this changes who you are. Like it's not that it changes, it's just, it's very related to who you are as a person. So you can't really separate the autism and the ADHD from the person, like you can do with some other diagnosis, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And then about finding yourself again, who that person is.
Yeah. Yeah. Who am I? Great question. I don't know.
That's okay. It's a beautiful journey.
Yes.
So, Isabel, you're a visual storyteller, and you have a mission to help driven founders and brands tell their stories and drive positive change in social media. So how did that documentary, Misrepresentation, lead you down this path?
Let me just say, first of all, this is such a good question. Such a great question. I don't think nobody ever like asked me that. Yeah, so I love storytelling. I always have. And I truly, truly believe in like in its power to shape and change perspective. And misrepresentation shows how the media and the patriarchy really take advantage of that in a negative way. And in the case of this documentary, also the impact of how women were portrayed and the lack of representation of women in the media, both like in front and behind the camera, you know, it shows like the impact of it. And now that documentary is like, it came in 2011, so it's been 10 years, right? So since then, there has been some change for women representation, in this case, at least. But we are now seeing some change for queer people and people of color as well. But for folks with disabilities and for folks like us, there's barely any, right? So there's a quote in this documentary from Jane Fonda that she says, "You can't be what you can't see." And that's true to some level, I mean, to a huge level, because representation matters. And that is the thing to actually create and change people's perspective, including their own perspective of themselves. So watching it, I knew that if I were to go on this creative path, I would want to use my skills to help change people's perspective in a positive way and somehow improve representation for these groups, you know, especially now that, like, I know I'm neurodivergent, I know I'm a disabled person, especially now. I had this thing with mental health for a while, like, I always wanted to talk about mental health and everything, and that's also representation, but especially now as a disabled person, as an autistic person and ADHD, like, I really want to use my skills to bring that to the spotlight, you know. So that documentary really, like, opened my mind to it.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, I give all credit to Doug for these questions. It's just a really good question asker person. So
I've seen his other podcasts, and yeah, you go.
We won't talk about the bad questions where there's not good responses. So we're just going to focus on the
the question. Yeah, but you just naturally ask good questions. And then sometimes there's a bit of refinement from me a little bit, but otherwise.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that it goes back to being curious. I think that's an important aspect of it. And I think that's, I haven't talked to Kelly or anyone else about this, but I think that's related to being autistic in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
so,
could be, yeah. But it's such good questions. I noticed that with your other podcast with Becca. And yeah.
But I think there's a little bit more of a layer to it, Doug. You don't give yourself credit. There's one thing to be curious.
Yeah.
There's another thing to be, you're not like curious and ignorant. You're curious, but you've done your research. Like, you're detailed curious, right?
Yeah.
It digs.
Yeah, exactly. You're an investigator. And you're not, like, you don't ask rude questions. You don't ask, like, they're not ridiculous questions. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, I really like it.
I appreciate that. So, Isabel, in thinking about social media, you know, I think there's so many negative aspects to it, but I do think it's such a great avenue, you know, for so many people. What about, like, maybe ways that there can be positive change in social media? What do you hope are the, you know, some of the trends that we kind of move away from?
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, maybe what I'm going to say cliche, I don't know. But this canceling culture thing, that, I mean, for sure, I would like it to go away because, you know, no one is perfect. People make mistakes and they should be allowed a chance to learn and make it better, right? Like, at least in my opinion, like, nobody's perfect, but, like, with social media, it's complicated because you say one thing and sometimes you don't even know what you meant and then you canceled, right? Like, also, social media right now has a lot of everyone doing the same thing and people are trying so hard to stay relevant at all costs. And I kind of, like, I find that kind of not necessarily positive. Because, you know, like, I don't want to see 10 people doing exactly the same thing when I'm going on my Instagram, which I'm trying to stay away from, by the way, but because that doesn't inspire me, that doesn't bring me anything, like, you know, I mean, I would like those things to go away. Like, I would like to see people doing, being brave to do their own thing more. It doesn't matter if it's like, if they think it's bad or good, whatever. I would like them to feel more free to do their own thing despite, like, likes and engagement, although I know for a lot of people that's very important, I know, but, and also the canceling thing, like, I don't think people should be canceled, you know, I think they should be held accountable. That's what I think.
That's a big difference. So if we could talk a little bit more about that, then what is the line, I guess, between being held accountable and canceling?
Yeah.
And or, okay, so wait, hold on. What happens, like, where, I guess what you're saying is that there's a lot of that kind of retribution, right? Instead of healing that's happening, it's like a punishment. And it's kind of like, okay, at what point does the punishment stop? Or can it, right? Because it seems that sometimes the punishment seems to be, like, permanent. And it's like, you're done. You said, you know, you said something problematic and harmful, and now we're never going to give you another chance again.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people are doing. And there are people who actually kind of deserve, like, to be more of a harsh, like, accountability type. But, like, an example is Lizzo. She released a single, like, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an ableist slur in there. And she didn't know, right? So the disabled community came on and called out on her. And, you know, she listened, she apologized, she changed the single, right? Like, she changed the lyrics. And that's kind of like holding people accountable. I'm coming to you and I'm saying, like, hey, you did this. I just want you to know this is not cool. When other people, what happened to other people who are not, let's say, as liked as Lizzo necessarily, or, you know, they don't necessarily have the chance to change that, people just go and say, you are out. Like, we are canceling you. Let's everybody unfollow this person. This person said this. And it's like, okay, can we come to this person and give them, like, the benefit of the doubt and say, like, hey, did you know about this? And if you did know, like, why the hell did you do that? But, you know, like, and ask them to explain themselves. And if they keep doing, like, we've seen with some comedians, let's say, let's not name anybody, but let's say with some comedians, you know, people complain, they, instead of listening, they said, I'm not doing anything wrong, when they basically are, right? And that's something else. So you see, like, there is a difference, like, instead of, right, like, canceling the person right away, just give them the benefit of the doubt. And even canceling, like, the word canceling is so harsh. It's just so harsh. Like, people need to be able to learn from their mistakes. Because everybody's human, and nobody has, how do you say, glass ceiling? Everybody has a glass ceiling. Everybody has a glass ceiling. Okay, that's, yes.
So what's also interesting, if we're talking about, like, current media stuff or current gossip, you know, I don't know if you've heard, but Beyonce released a song recently with the same slur.
Yes.
I'm just like, where were you? Were you under a rock when this happened?
I asked the same thing, like, okay, fine, she's not into news, whatever, but where is her team? Is her team under the same bubble that she is? I love her. And my husband was actually like, you know, like, she wrote these songs a while ago. It could be that she forgot that that word was there. And I'm like, it seems like this is a word that people are using in that community, right? Like, Lizzo, Beyonce, like, we need to go in that community and say, hey, guys, you know, like, here's what's happening. So we do things for you. Can you do things for us as well? You know, like, it's like, can we, and that's the intersectionality, right? Like, can we, as a group of, like, different people who a lot of them have the same things, you know, the same, like, intersectionally, the same identities, like, can we talk and, like, make things better? Because the same way that words in your community hurt you, there are words in our community that hurt us as well, you know? So I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
So one thing you've also said about with everybody being on social media is that everyone is a storyteller now. So are there questions people should be asking themselves when thinking about what they put on their social media?
Yes. Absolutely. I was going to say absolutely, but I don't know if I can curse here. But anyways, yes. I think the most important question is what I'm going to post going to be helpful for someone? Like, is this thing that I'm going to share either whatever it is, like, is this going to be helpful for someone in some ways? And that goes to those who are also, like, afraid, not only to those who are posting, like they don't mind, but also those who are afraid of posting their thoughts as well. Because sometimes there is someone out there who needs to hear what you have to say. And I've experienced that personally in both ways, like, both me sharing something that's personal and, you know, and the person, like somebody else, like saw that and replied to me and said, I needed to hear that. And in the same way, somebody else posting and me seeing that and not feeling so lonely. So that's the positive part of it. But also, like, think if what you're sharing is going to help someone or if it's going to hurt someone. Another thing is what you're sharing true? That's very important nowadays. Well, it's been important for us, I guess, a few years now, right? Because, I mean, I don't want to say when it started, but is what you're sharing actually true? Did you fact check, like, is this coming from a source that is reputable? I don't even know if I said that word right.
Reputable.
Yes. Oh my God, that's when you know I'm not from here. You know, if you're sharing a piece of news or, like, I don't know, some kind of research, whatever, just make sure that what you're sharing is, like, true. Or even if you're sharing something about somebody else, because you can end up being part of spreading fake news, spreading rumors that you don't need to be spreading. So, I mean, ask yourself, is this going to be helpful? Is what I'm sharing true? You know, if it's not about yourself, because it's about somebody else or about something that you learn. Like, is this true? Because there's so many BS on social media right now. Like, it's sad, to be honest.
Well, I think especially as autistic people, we have this whole sense of justice and truth and facts that we want to make sure everything's correct. And it drives us nuts when it's not. But I wanted to, like, touch on what you were saying there about, you know, what we're putting out there. Is it helpful?
Yeah.
You know, or is it harmful? And there are so many ways that I think people don't realize, like when you said that we're all storytellers, mm-hmm. that we all have a voice. And that, like you said, people don't realize how important your own voice is and how much it's needed. And it's so sad to me when people kind of restrain themselves and don't put themselves out there. And when I say put yourself out there, I don't mean like you have to be out there posting every 2 seconds and dancing and whatever, but letting people understand your thoughts and your voice, because it's so unique to you and that you do have influence. Like, influencers, but even smaller people have an influence that you can control. Like, I have a friend who's a music producer. And we've known each other since high school. So, you know, now, like, I'm still friends with him, but, like, you know, he has albums and stuff like that. But he, at some point, had came out with some songs that were, to me, misogynistic. You know, he had certain words in there and things like that. And I called him out. I'm like, you have a daughter. You have a daughter the same age as my son. And I'm like, what do you think that you're teaching her or that she should be thinking when she hears a song from her father's mouth with these words? And he, at first he got angry at me. He got angry and he said, well, you know, you shouldn't be bringing my personal family into this. No, no, no. It has nothing to do with my kid. No, no, no. And he said he didn't appreciate it, but he's never released a song those words since. So there's something there that I touched, whether he was angry at me or not, where I was like, you have a platform. You can still make rap music and you can make whatever kind of music you want, but you don't have to use those words. Like, you don't have to do it like everyone else does it. You can actually do it in a respectful way. So anyway, all that to say, just saying that, you know, you can use your voice, you can use your art, you can share it, but you don't have to do it in a way that's harmful.
Yeah. We are all influencing people, and that's what people don't get. Like, it doesn't matter if you have 1,000 followers or if you have 1,000,000. Of course, the one that has 1,000,000 followers is going to get a lot more people, which is actually kind of dangerous also. But we are all storytellers now, and what we are saying is making an impact on somebody's thoughts in perspective, right? And so we have a responsibility in some ways.
And just kind of with what Kelly was just talking about is that something that I've seen throughout my life, and it's been family members, so-called friends, I'll say, or acquaintances, like, especially like when they're, you know, male, assigned male at birth, it seems like they feel more comfortable because I'm also a male to talk and express themselves in those ways around me. And I've had to repeatedly throughout my life be like, hey, no, I don't think so. I have a problem with it. Haven't done it 100% of the time, but definitely that's something that just continuously has come up in my life. So, Isabel, I'm extremely fortunate because I get to co-host this with Kelly, and you know she is amazing. And beyond this podcast, I co-host a podcast with one of the few people that I admire as much as Kelly, and that's Becca Laurie Hector, who recently was chosen for LinkedIn's Top Voices in Disability Advocacy. They chose. So from what I understand, you've been working with Becca to improve her reach on social media, and I can definitely tell the differences recently. But I'm really interested in the process for you working with another autistic woman advocate and storyteller.
Yes, working with Becca has been a dream, actually. And I'm not saying this because I know she will probably listen to this interview, but because it's true, I do not BS on, you know, like people. So it's true, like it's been kind of a dream. She's basically my ideal client, I guess. I tried very hard to picture my ideal client at some point as a business exercise, right? And I couldn't. And now I got it. Because working with another autistic means cutting the fluff, you know, that I never really learned how to do anyway. I'm very direct, and people in Brazil know me for being like very funny, but also rude. And it's not that I'm rude, it's just that like, I have little filter issue where I'll tell you things that apparently you don't want to hear. Because I say to my husband all the time, people say they want honesty, people say they want the truth, but they don't. It's a lie. It's a lie. And I'm not talking people in general. Usually, neurotypicals, they don't really want to hear the truth. So working with another neurodivergent person, especially like autistic person, has been great because, you know, we are able to give each other feedback without the fluff, right? Like, we are very direct to each other. And I think that's why we work well together. And that's why what we are doing is working, right? As you said, like, there has been a change on her social media impact and reach. And so much so that, you know, like, she was, as you said, like, she was recognized as a LinkedIn top voice. And I mean, I think that's why. I think it's because we work very well together, and she gives me a lot of freedom to tell her, like, let's, you know, what if we do things in a certain way like this? Like, what if we do that? And she's like, she's very open to my creative. In my creative, like, I have creative freedom that I've never had before in my life with a client, which is, like, amazing. I mean, it's just, it's a dream come true to me. As a business owner, to have a client like Becca, she's awesome. And to be able to represent, you know, and like help another autistic person reach more autistic people and increase representation in our community. I mean, what else can I ask?
I think what you're referring to, though, when you're talking about giving the feedback and straightforward, and we are allowed to swear, it's our podcast, we can swear as much as we want. It's called the shit sandwich. It's where, like, you have to, like, give a compliment, then you can give the critique, then you have to give another compliment. But, you know, but you did so, you tried so hard. Oh, I really liked what you did, but this part was a piece of crap. And, oh, but you know, it's okay, we can work with, you know, and since that, it's called the shit sandwich.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that, especially because I moved here in 2014. I was how old? I don't even remember, 27, 20, almost 20, I don't know. In Brazil, at least where I am from, you know, I told Becca one of these days about this. I was able to be more autistic there than I am able to be autistic in America, because we don't have that fluff, you know, like we don't do small talk, first of all. I never learned small talk because it wasn't part of my culture. I don't know how things are going now because, you know, social media is making a lot of countries kind of the same for some reason, I think. I don't know, which is very sad. I didn't learn to do small talk and I wasn't asked for it. We got feedback, you know, like at least my boss, the only boss that I actually had for like 2 years, wouldn't come with me like going around the corners first. She would come and she would be just trying not to be harsh with me, but she wouldn't do the shit sandwich that you're talking about, you know, like, and then when I came here, it was so different. And like, I think that's what contributed for me to like going a little like, okay, what am I supposed to do in this land? And I noticed that even more than there, here, people really, like, what I say about living here in America, and I know it's not true for, in Brazil, it can be that too, but people don't mean what they say. And I noticed that here a long time ago, and that is very troublesome for me because I don't like that. And when I say that I don't BS when I talk about people, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean what I say. And here, people just will just compliment you or do these things just to get something from you or just to start a conversation. And I just didn't grow up doing that.
Yeah, that's very much the, we should go for coffee sometime.
Yeah, and then you try to schedule, and
but they don't
like,
know.
Easy. I'm like,
no, they don't
what?
Want to have a coffee. They didn't.
No, I don't. I still don't get that.
I don't know. I don't do that, but I don't know. When somebody says that now, I'm just like, okay, well, then let me know. And then I'm,
sometime is not a specific day or time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and then when you try to get a specific date and time, you notice that people, and now I'm like, I just don't know, is this person for real or is this person just like saying something, like when you ask the cashier, how are you, and you're not interested in knowing how they are, like they are not interested in knowing how we are, which is also another question that I have problem with. Like people asking me, how are you? I still sometimes I look at the person like, I don't know what to say. I'm like, I'm good. Thank you. How are you? Like that, like a robot.
Well, that's what happens, though. That's what happens to people. I mean, that kind of robot thing, and it happens a lot in behavioral therapies, right? Where we end up with autistic people who look like robots, and they go, they know, they're going through the motions, they're doing the correct things, right? When they go like,
yeah,
hi, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine, right? It's complete flat affect.
Yeah.
But it's what I find is so mind-boggling about that when I see that is neurotypical people automatically feel safe with that. Because they're only listening to the words. They don't care that the person has no emotion, no feeling, no nothing behind it. And it's just like, you have to say those words. It, you know, this person came in the elevator, they didn't say hi, so now I'm scared of them. And rather than like having somebody go, hi, how are you? Good day, right? And that apparently is safe. That's okay. But like, it's mind-boggling to me, like
yeah.
These social weirdness that we go through.
I think that's why, like, I had so much trouble, you know, like, here, when I moved here. And I felt so kind of isolated because I couldn't get the hang of interacting with the American culture. And I'm not criticizing American culture in any way.
It's okay, I'm not American. You can say what you like.
But it's just, like, it's just so different. And for me, and especially when I found out about being autistic, is like, oh, now it makes sense. Like, I learned to mask in my country with my people, which they are a little, like, you know, different anyways, because we are from the Northeast, and we are loud, and we dance on the street, and we do this, and we do that. We are just, like, happy people. So it was easier in some ways. Of course, the school was a little complicated, but and then I got here and people like they're adults and they pretend that they like your shoes and they pretend that they like what you said. Like it's so, and they ask you how you are without being interested. And I'm like, yeah, I don't get you guys. And now I know why.
This is so interesting for me just because my book how to parent like an autistic. The only other language it's available in is in Brazilian Portuguese, because I had a translator read it in English, and she's like, this needs to be in Brazilian Portuguese. And she did it. She translated it for me.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and she just felt like that book needed to be out there in the world. So to me, like, understanding Brazilian culture, trying to understand the context of autism there, like, I get messages sometimes about it, but they're in Portuguese, so I have to, like, Google Translate. But otherwise, yeah, that's the differences in those cultures, I find, is...
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why, like, I don't know, even to be Brazilian and being, like, diagnosed here in America, like, I remember the lady who... The psychologist said, oh, you have trouble with descriptions, but it's because English is your second language. And I was like, yeah, right. You should see me trying to translate slangs from my region in Northeast to people from the south of Brazil. And they would ask me, but what does that mean? And I'm like, I don't know how to explain. I wouldn't know how to explain to them what it meant. And it's just because, you know, I guess because we replicate things, sometimes we don't even think what they mean necessarily. So I have a lot of trouble with that. And she said, oh, no, it's because of your English, a second language. I was like, no, ma'am, you don't understand. I'm like this in Portuguese, too. It doesn't matter. I will have trouble with, like, explaining things to you and descriptions and like, language, because it's just my brain. It's not because I'm English, a second language. And, yeah, I mean, she didn't believe me, but, well...
It's the most, like, stereotypically autistic podcast in the world, because not only is it run by autistic people interviewing other autistic people, but then I have my autistic son humming and stimming in the background. So I think...
You have the background is blurry, so I can't really see.
Oh, so he's actually in a different room, but he's so loud that... Oh. Like, I don't know if you can hear it. I mean,
no, I can't.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
No. Oh, okay. That's fine. But I hear it, so... He's jumping up and down a trampoline and just having a great time. So you recently also wrote an article where you talked about those that can walk and stand and use mobility aids, and you're one of those people. So sometimes people can be hesitant to use these aids. What was the case? Is that the case for you, actually? And how has mobility aids made a difference in your life?
Yes. And going back to Becca, actually, she was actually the one who helped me embrace the thing that I needed to get, because I knew I needed to get a mobility aid for a while. And she was the one, I had a talk with her, you know, and she was the one who said, Isabel, if you need a mobility aid, screw what people think. Just do you and get the mobility aid, because that's your freedom. She was the final push for me to get my scooter. It's actually a scooter. It's cute. And I put a lot of stickers on it, you know, like, yes, I'm disabled. You can't see it. Like, I just didn't call anybody the B word, but I almost did. I almost got those kind of stickers, but I was like, okay, we'll have children reading this. I bought it very recently, actually. It's been basically a month, and I haven't been around much with it because I can't stand the heat, unfortunately, even with the scooter. Like, my blood flow starts to get very weak, and I can't. But I was very hesitant, and I still am a little hesitant, because I don't want people questioning me, first of all. And I think that's why I put all the stickers, right? Because that's already the first barrier that I'm, like, kind of breaking. I'm like, before you ask, you're going to see my stickers and you're going to shut up. But I don't want people to look at me and perceive me in a different way because of my mobility aid, you know. So I'm very hesitant. This is very new for me. I'm still, like, I am going into the film industry, sort of, because I don't have, like, an ambition to have, like, job, you know, full-time job anywhere. But I would like to collaborate with those people in the film industry, right? And I want to be directing. And I know I'm good at that. Like, I know I'm good at directing. You know, I can write, I can edit, but I'm also good at directing, and I want to do that. And I'm very afraid of having people coming to me and saying that I cannot be the directing, that I should stick with script writing, you know, and with editing, because those are the things that allow me to sit down on a desk and work from my computer, right? No, I want to be on the job site and I want to be able to direct. And I'm very like concerned about those things in terms of like, are they going to look at me and disregard me regardless of my talent, or don't even give me the chance to show my talent because they see my disability first and my mobility aid. Yeah, I mean, I'm still a little hesitant, and I can see why people with disabilities, they have that hesitation, you know.
Yeah, I think that's another part of the journey, right? The kind of acceptance and being okay with it. I have a cane. I have a cane from when I had an accident. I hurt my foot very badly. And then like just a few weeks later, I had booked a trip to San Francisco. And I was like, well, I am not going to go to San Francisco. I'm going to go with my cane. So I figured if I'm going to have a cane, I'm going to have the most blinged out, fancy ass cane that is possible. So it's multicolored, it's rainbow colored, it's shiny, it's got butterflies, and it's beautiful. It's a piece of art. And I leave it in my porch. It's still hanging up in my porch. If I ever need it again, it's there. And I have no hesitancy to take it out. And hey, if you need it, keep going. You brought up an interesting point about, you know, these questions that people that feel entitled to ask. And it's so interesting how we were just talking about how, you know, American culture is like, well, we're going to ask you how you are, but we don't care.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, we're going to ask you an intensely personal question about your disability to somebody that I don't know, right? And feel entitled to have a response to that, an honest response. It's super bizarre, right?
Yeah.
So like, there's one way of deflecting these kind of things that I love to deal with. It's a guy on YouTube. I forgot his name. I'm bad with names. He says that when people ask you something that, you know, is private or you just don't want to answer, you can say something like, that's interesting. You would ask that question. Why do you ask that? And ask them why they're asking. You know, that's strange. That's a strange question to ask somebody that you don't know. Why would you ask that? And it gives them a chance, like, you know, again, going back to that kind of grace, right? It gives them a chance to think for a second. Maybe I shouldn't have asked that.
Yeah.
Most of the time they'll turn around and they'll just walk away. And sometimes they'll think, oh, you know, I asked because I was just curious. And then you can say, well, then that's your choice then too. You know, whether or not you're going to continue to engage in this conversation or not. It's not confrontational, but it's a great way to get people to think about what they're asking before it goes any further, right?
For me, it's like, I'm so afraid because for me, it's still a kind of confrontation because it comes from the people pleasing and like always having to be nice kind of thing, you know? And I'm so afraid of having to confront people, I guess, that most part of, I mean, there was the internalized ableism, right? That I had to work on and I'm still working on, I'm not going to lie. But there is also this thing where, what if they ask me, what if they see me differently? What if they say something to me that will hurt me and I don't know how to defend myself to them? And then I'm going to, for a week, going through like that footage in my head, like, this is what you were supposed to say, because of course I'll have the perfect, amazing answer that would give them on the, like, leave them on the floor after the thing happens, right? And I think that's why also, like, I'm so, because that's a great thing to ask. Like, it has happened to me before in a different scenario about a different thing where I actually, for one of the very first times, stood for myself and I put my hands on the table and I said, why would you ask that? Why, what make you think that you can ask that? Right? Like, it was a sort of confrontation and I'm very proud of that moment because the person I saw, the person's reaction to it, and I saw shame on that person's reaction, and that's what I wanted, to be honest. Like, just want to make sure that you all understand, I wanted the person to be ashamed of what you said and asked. So I said that, but you know, like, when the thing's happening, to have that thought come to you and you say that back to the person, in my case, it's like I need to rehearse that in my head a lot, I think.
Yeah, you need to practice it. It's a practice. Yeah, it's a practice response. Yeah, for sure.
I need to rehearse that many times in my head for me to be able to actually do that. And that's exhausting also. Like, rehearsing, which is something that we do often, unfortunately. Rehearsing interactions with people, like, even when I go to UPS, let's say, or I'm rehearsing what I'm going to say so I know, like, what to do and how to get out. And I thought everybody did that. And I learned that, no, not everybody does that. You know, it's kind of exhausting. But yeah, I mean, I will learn how to do it. And that's such a great answer that you told me. Like, I'm definitely going to start thinking about that. And I also give the person, like, the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes they are disabled themselves and we don't know. And they are having trouble getting their head around it. And maybe our story will help them accept themselves a little bit more. Sometimes it's just people being douchebags, but...
Yeah, but it's hard to tell. Like, I got, like, on LinkedIn, I got, like, 12 messages in a row from somebody I just connected with. And I was like, whoa, okay, this is intense. And they were connected with some of my other friends. And he was explaining himself, and I didn't quite understand exactly what he meant. And he's like, well, I'm going to ask you to talk to one of the people that we already know. And she got back to me, and she goes, oh, he's newly diagnosed autistic. He's super intense, but he's just, you know, he just wants to connect with people. I said, yeah. Oh, okay, I understand now. But like, I'm glad. And luckily I didn't discount him. I didn't like block him. I was just like, what is going on? But then you got to take a moment and go, okay, what is actually happening here? And then again, give people that grace and go, oh yeah, okay, I know what that's like. I was there. It's cool. It's no problem.
Yeah. It's too hard though.
to do that, right?
All great points, but scripts are, I think, very helpful in that situation and in a lot of other situations. I can't tell you how many times I've been supporting people who use mobility aids, and people will ask, like Kelly was saying, the most personal questions. And they seem to ask them in the most public of places. Like, they love in the grocery store, for whatever reason, to ask these questions. You know, so it's always very frustrating, even when you do have a script.
Yeah.
So, Isabel, I definitely look forward to watching the first film you direct, whatever that comes to be.
Well, but... I directed one and written. I have a short film. It's not very good, but I'm still very proud of it. It's coming out next. Well, I'm finally going to release it, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that I'm actually going to release it next month, September. Yes, in September. Yes. So I'll definitely let you know.
Wonderful. So I'm wondering, I think you'd be a great person to answer this question as a storyteller. What types of stories do you think would be important for Kelly and myself to highlight as we move forward with the Intersections on the Spectrum podcast?
You know, like... You guys are already like bringing interesting stories, you know, to the podcast, and you do such a good job like highlighting autistic folks who have multiple identities, right? Not only the autistic identity. I don't think I have like a good answer for that, because I already think you guys are doing such a great job, especially with Doug's like questions that he goes and digs and with his curiosity and brings like great questions that make people like actually like, yes, let's share this. I think you guys just need to like keep going, keep bringing diverse autistic folks and keep asking them great questions. I mean, you guys are doing such a good job already bringing diversity and inside the autistic community, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Isabel, and thanks so much for joining me and Kelly today. It was a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. I love talking to you guys. Yes, I can't wait to hear it.